Good evening, everyone. Lovely to see you, as always. In your various zendos, each in their own place, beautiful snowflakes. They don't fall in another place. Yesterday was James Joyce's 140th birthday, and it was the 100th anniversary of the publication of Ulysses, his great novel, which was published in Paris at the original Shakespeare and Company on February 2nd, 1922. Some of you know that February 2nd, at least when I was using the blog, I would always mention Joyce, his birthday. And what meaning his work and his life had for me, and how I saw it. Ulysses is a sort of, as Jung even said, Ulysses is a Buddhist Bible. So I haven't really talked about Joyce much in recent years. But yesterday I, of course, was thinking about it. And one of my favorite, I have a lot of favorite quotes, favorite passages from the book. But one of my favorite quotes is actually not from that book, but from his first novel, Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. And it's the central character is one of the central characters in Ulysses, Stephen Dedalus, who is actually Joyce's alter ego, in a sense. It's a fictional character, but there's a lot of him in it. And at the end of that book, the young Stephen is going to leave Dublin and go off to Paris to theoretically study medicine, but basically just to get away from Dublin, which he sees as very closed and small, get away from his family, the great poverty that he lives in. And so the young Stephen says, "Welcome, O life. I go to encounter for the millionth time the reality of experience." When I read this quote, I couldn't believe it when I read that in that book. Now, how Zen can you be, you know? Welcome, O life, welcome it all. I go forth to encounter for the millionth time the reality of experience. Actually, more than a million, probably, because going forth to encounter the reality of experience is every single moment, right? And I've talked about this quote before, you know. I wrote it on someone's rakusu, and I think I talked about it in connection with that not so long ago, probably, but I don't remember. Although I wrote it on the rakusu long, long, long ago. But for some reason, the person had sent me a picture of the rakusu, reminding me of it and telling me how important it was for them to have that quote on their rakusu. So why is this so important? you know, by saying that, nothing is rejected there. Everything is welcomed. The whole life. Welcome, O life. For the millionth time, I go into it, I go into it, I go into it, I go into it. It's not an idea about life. If you go forth to encounter the reality of the experience, it's not an idea. It's not, I go forth for the millionth time to the idea of reality. It's the experience of it. He doesn't reject anything in that except what separates him from the experience of life. What does that mean? Wow. How do we, you know, it's like the Zen, the koan of not knowing is most intimate. So Stephen Dedalus goes forth without any idea of what he will encounter. He's going off to Paris. Doesn't know what he will find. It's actually what Joyce did. And welcoming whatever it is. Can we really do that? You know, we can have that aspiration, but do we really welcome it? You know, our practice is about seeing the reality of experience, actually, and how could I say, not escaping from this world as it is to some kind of transcendental special place. But really going into this moment here, this life as it is, and finding that's the true meaning. You know, when we talk about, there's this chant that we do formally before Dharma talks, which we did this summer at the retreat, for those of you who were there and remember, the Gatha on opening the sutra. So it says, may we truly realize the Tathagata's true meaning. Well, so what's the Tathagata's true meaning? The only way to realize it is to go forth to encounter the reality of experience. That's where we realize the Tathagata's true meaning. Because that's exactly what the Tathagata's true meaning is. Welcome, O life. Go forth and experience it. And all of the teachings, all of the texts, all of the koans, all, you know, Suzuki Roshi, you know, says something to the effect of, if you understand this point, there will be no separation between your Zen practice and your life. It's all one. It's all one. It's all the reality of experience. I teach a course online for Buddhist teachers about boundaries in relationships and power abuse by teachers, whether it's, you know, emotional, financial, sexual, all kinds of abuses. So I teach this course so that teachers won't do it, you know, it's a preventive measure. And there's a discussion forum, and today there was someone, it was a question of power and owning your power, but yet feeling powerless or whatever. And someone in the discussion posted on the discussion board, I'm really surprised that in our modern day, when everything is online, that nobody posts the answers to the koans online. And I was surprised to hear that, to read that, because I thought, what are you going to post? I mean, direct experience can only be directly experienced. You can't post anything online about that. You could post your experience, maybe, but that's not the answer to the koan. So I wrote that on the discussion board. Maybe that's why I was thinking about this quote from Joyce after, because there had been that discussion on the board earlier today. It's all your life. Yeah, one of my other favorite quotes, actually, which is on a poster and a card that I once gave a workshop in New York about Joyce, about Ulysses, which was called In Full Bloom, The Bodhisattva Way and James Joyce's Ulysses, was the name of the workshop. I also did that this in France once, but I don't think anyone here was present for that. Were you there, Lisa? Was that before your time? Yeah. Debbie, you weren't there. No. Anyway, and the quote that is on the poster and on the card that they had, I gave them the quote. And this is from Ulysses, not from the other book. We walk through ourselves meeting robbers, ghosts, giants, old men, young men, wives, widows, brothers in love, but always meeting ourselves. It's all you. It's all us. So the robbers, ghosts, giants, old men, young men, wives, widows, brothers in love. Whoever we meet, that's you. Whatever you meet, that's you. Everything is your life. That's the teaching. Someone was telling me recently, if it was someone here, we speak up about, I think we were talking about Thich Nhat Hanh and about waves, you know, in the ocean, that each wave is a different manifestation of, I mean, different waves, it's all the same ocean, right? It's just manifesting differently, the waves. No, it was no one here who was saying this to me. And yet, each is distinct, each is different, yet it's all part, it's all one. So that's how we can say, you know, we're always meeting ourselves, because we're all the same, and yet we're all singularly, exclusively different, unique, and unlike anything else that has ever been. And yet, it's just like the waves, just another manifestation, or you know, leaves on one tree, just different parts of the tree, different manifestations of the leaf of the tree. Yeah. So, just looking back at the card about the workshop. Yeah. We go forth into our lives and that, in fact, that's what any spiritual path is, actually, is to go forth and experience the world, the reality of experience. We don't know what it will be. We don't know who it will be. We don't know where we will go. But because we don't have those ideas, whatever we meet is it. Whatever happens is it. It just so happens that yesterday in my garden, two trees were killed and removed. Because they had grown too tall. And the people in the apartment building next door didn't like it. And they all, one of the trees was also hanging over our roof and creating too much humidity because there was no, and it was damaging the roof. In any case, it pained me greatly that these trees were killed. And I for months and months and months and months and months, I tried to convince that it didn't need to be done. Didn't discuss it with my husband, who was the one who was in charge of it, and put it off and put it off and put it off. And then the day came and it had to be done. And I was very upset. But I welcomed it as a life. Seeing the reality, seeing the human folly of planting things and then destroying them when they don't suit you anymore, which is what humans do, right? Maybe other species do that too, but humans do it a lot. Saying, oh, well, it was a mistake. It wasn't supposed to grow so high. It wasn't anticipated that the branches would go into the balcony of the people next door. It was a mistake, but still. Of course, I understood all of that, and yet it was still taking a life. Because I didn't like it, or someone didn't like it. So I just tried to atone for it, acknowledge it, cried for the trees in the morning, um, wore my headphones. Anyone who had Dokusan with me yesterday knows I had the headphones on, so that I wouldn't hear the sawing and grinding going on, which actually would have made it impossible to talk because it was too loud. But still, I just welcomed it as going forth for the millionth time to the reality of experience. Stayed with my sadness. Went out and touched what was left of the trees after. Put some of the branches on them with little stones. It was kind of a tomb or something. Chanted the Enmeijuku Kenengyo 9 times. Cats had no idea what was going on. Loved the fact that I was out there, but ran around like crazy. And that was welcoming life and death. You know, when we say welcome all life, I go forth for the millionth time to meet the reality of experience. That means having no idea about experience. Because if I have an idea, then I'm not going to experience it. How could I possibly have an idea about what the experience is before I've had it? You know? And it's really a precipice. I don't know. It's jumping off. Sometimes we say jumping off the 100-foot pole. It's jumping off the cliff. Or in Bodhidharma's terminology, sitting down facing the wall. Crazy thing is that in Soto Zen, that facing the wall has been taken literally, and people sit looking at the wall. But it's really looking at the wall of not knowing, which it can help to look at the wall. It can help to sit there and look at a wall. A blank wall that there's nothing to grasp onto. It's really jumping off the precipice. And yet, the rewards, we can't truly see the splendid beauty of the moment if we don't do that. If we step forth every moment to encounter the reality of experience, well, then there's, you know, untold riches. Everything is in its place. And so we have practice where we put everything in its place, where everyone has a place in the Zendo, everything has a place on the altar. Dogen's teachings to the cook is when something should be in the high place, you put it on the high place, and something should be on the low place, you put it in the low place. It's all based around that this notion of everything in its place. And by having these rituals, that helps us to see it. That helps us to go forth. And encounter the reality of experience and appreciate things for what they are. We can see the value of each thing when we encounter it then, if everything is in its place. Now, it's a hard thing to say, okay, those trees weren't in their place. from the absolute point of view, they're in their place now too. You know, some people would say, oh, well, you know, people were really well, we could say, you know, well, we shouldn't be planting trees in the city because that's not their place or something. But can we see things as they are and then respond appropriately to the situation? I tried to appreciate the value of those trees with my little ritual. I say little because there were no bells and incense and candles and, you know, hundreds chanting with me. But it wasn't little. All the Buddhas and patriarchs and all of you were with me there. Because my heart was full of it, and my heart was there. So that was a way of fully appreciating the value of the trees. And now, seeing how different the garden looks. It's not better or worse, but it's different. It's very different. And it will be different again when something else is planted there, because there soon will be something else planted there. So, today I tried to go forth, welcome, O life, looking out at the garden. I tried to live up to the Tathagata's true meaning. So, that's what I have to say, I think. Doing honor to Joyce a day after his birthday and Ulysses' 100th birthday. And doing justice to the trees. So, if anyone would like to practice sharing, I was going to say practice sharing, but say anything, questions, comments. Freddie is saying he has to leave. Okay, bye, Freddie.
Rashi, all the trees are cut? All the trees in the garden are cut?
No, only two.
Okay.
There are many other trees in the garden.
Yeah. Only to say that one way I saw architecture where they integrate arms from trees in house. But it's something they do before. The tree is there and they build a house and they integrate. And it's possible to do that. It's very beautiful. You can have leaves in your living room that come from outside. And I think about that, because I know I knew that your trees are, and I remember this architecture, but it's not easy to convince the neighbor to.
No, it's true. And actually, we do have a tree in our garden that the house is built around, that the architect could have theoretically taken that tree away and made the house differently, but she wanted to keep that tree. And we're very happy that she did. So, yeah. It's not, doesn't grow into the house, but the house is built in such a way so that the trees stay there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny.
Thank you. Joao.
Good evening, everyone. Several things came up, but I just stayed with one when you were briefly mentioning the instructions for the cook and about organizing and putting each thing in its place. When I was in the kitchen in the summer, at a certain point we felt that it was a good idea, and we had time to do that, to organize a bit the pantry, the place where the in the back where everything was kept, the vegetables and the fruit and the packets of everything was there. And when we did that, we tried to find some way of organizing what was there for us to use. And when that was done, I suddenly realized that until just before that was done, I had a very limited idea, because I was not completely aware of what was there, quantity and also quantities, how much we have of this, how much rice do we have or whatever. And so I realized when everything was organized, I suddenly realized that before that, I had a very limited idea of what we could do, how we could use what was there. And when everything was organized, my feeling was we can do absolutely everything. Like it then we knew exactly how much we had of everything and what we did have. And we weren't even, you know, what was not there, we didn't even consider it. And the possibilities it seems kind of counterintuitive or a paradox or doesn't make sense. It seems we kind of expect something else. It's like we expect the opposite, but actually it was like suddenly, oh, and for me it was really, we can do absolutely everything with this. So completely changed. And that just at that moment did I realize that I hadn't, I haven't thought about any of that before that, before we organized. Thank you.
Yeah, it seems like a paradox that by, and I think we were talking about this when we talked about the bookshelves and things, it seems like a paradox that when we clearly see things, when we put them in their right places, or we clearly look at the limits that we have, that suddenly it's boundless, like you said. It seems like a paradox, but it's not. So when we say, you know, I go forth for the millionth time to encounter the reality of experience, how do you understand that? You know, what do you, how do you, what does that mean for you, the reality of experience? Is it just some concept?
It can be.
Mm-hmm.
Something that also came up when you were talking, now I can't remember exactly what you were saying at the time, but I remembered how, for instance, in interactions with people, how it's very different. Many times, well, not many. Sometimes I find myself actually doing it, or sometimes I'm just aware of that can happen. Not dealing with the experience of the interaction with a person, but sometimes I may be interacting with the labels that I've put on, and that is very, that's something else. Interacting with the labels, not exactly the, and not the, you know, just.
What do you mean by label? Can you give an example?
Yeah, if I need to talk to someone who, because of some past experience with that person, you know, I label the person as a difficult person to talk with, or a person who gets angry easily, for instance, you know, and I can be trapped in that. I can be trapped, and that might, so when I go and meet and interact with that person the next time, I can easily you know, just, but I'm not actually interacting with the person. It's like I'm interacting with the label that I've put on the person.
You mean, so you have an idea of who the person is and how they
yeah,
work?
Yeah, I'm interacting with the idea that I have the person. That's what I was calling, referring as the label or the labels. Mm-hmm. And so it's absolutely, there is this, there's a gap. There's a huge gap. Yeah. I might as well be on like on the other side of the planet. Yeah. It's something else. It's not that being. It's not, and maybe even it's not myself. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is how we create suffering.
Yeah.
Debbie?
Yeah, I was thinking it feels to me when I'm actually having the experience of reality or the reality of experience, it's like the difference between eating a mousse au chocolat and seeing the words mousse au chocolat on a menu.
Yeah.
And Joanne was talking about labels. And to what extent a lot of my daily dealings are reading the menu. I was just, while we were sitting before you started talking, I have a lot of anxiety right now about everything, different things. I think the subject is not very interesting as much as the fact that there's anxiety. And I was watching how it was cutting through my experience of the moment. And kind of explaining to myself that that's probably what happens when I'm in harmony with an experience and having it, that's the mousse au chocolat. And when I'm anxious or afraid or angry or having an emotional experience with myself, it's cutting me off from the other people and the rest of the reality, then that's the menu. I'll get by on just reading the menu.
Yeah. Well, and the tricky thing is that when we make these, you know, separations of like, oh, it's much better to eat it, the mousse au chocolat, than to see the menu or read the recipe. And it is, it's very different. At the same time, that's also reality of experience. So we have to be careful not to push that one away, that experience away, because we want the other one. Although I totally understand what you're saying, Debbie. I'm just saying we have to be aware of this. Or Joao too, with the idea. Okay, so can we then take the step back and see, the reality of this experience is that I'm not in contact with who the person really is. I'm in contact with my idea of it. Or if my idea is obscuring, do we say that in English? We say that in French, but is obscuring my view of the person or my seeing the recipe is not allowing me to taste the mousse au chocolat.
It's that emptiness is open to everything, to be open to everything, to be, it's that this emptiness.
Well, everything is empty, we say. And it's always, that's the nature of things, of phenomenon of beings, the nature. It's always there. It's like the sun is always there, but the clouds cover it up, or the, you know, the earth is tilted in such a way so that we don't see it, but it's always there. So the nature of things is empty, which means it's full of everything, like we say. It's full. Everything is possible at every moment. So it's not that, what did you say, that emptiness is, that it, what did you say? Say it was, I think you were saying the same thing, but the way that you phrased it made it sound like emptiness was something. Or that the experience was emptiness or something. I can't remember, but in any case. When we have no ideas, then we can experience the emptiness. Yes, that's true. Otherwise, our ideas are like clouds covering it up, and we don't see it. Madeline, you have to unmute, yeah.
Sorry. At some point, Amy Rashi, you referred, it's always you. It's the situation, this to be in relation with someone, it's always about me. When there is a situation where we are interacting, but it's not only me, it's the whole situation, I think.
You are the whole situation.
Yeah.
In the sense that we have this very limited idea about who is I, who am I? And so we think of it as there's me in the situation, there's me in the other, there's me and all of that. But in fact, it's not limited. You're not limited to that. That's why we say it's all you, because everything that's manifesting is just another aspect of you.
Okay.
In that sense. It's like the waves in the ocean. One wave is not looking at the other and saying, well, that's not me. Well, it's a different wave. It's true, but they're all the same nature. They're all the same ocean, just manifesting in different ways. Okay. Sounds conceptual, I know.
No, it's only one thing.
That's right.
Living it.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And it kind of like Juan was saying of, you know, when you put things in their place, then suddenly it opens up this possibility. When we see this, when we say, okay, so this is just, I can perfectly see this guy. I can perfectly see this situation just for what it is, not how I think it is or if I like it or not like it. Then it's like, wow, everything opens up. There's so much more space and so much more possibility to how to behave, to respond to the situation if we're not hanging on to our ideas about it, or opinions, or beliefs about ourselves and about the others in the other situation. I had to really let go yesterday with these trees, and not carry it around all day and be mad at my husband and not be able to go through my day and do what I needed to do. I had to do Dokusans, and I had to, you know, do this teaching online and make lunch, and, you know, I had to let go of it. It doesn't mean not holding, you know, I'm still aware of it, but try to just stay with it without being attached to my ideas and emotions and position. And it did make it possible. My son came for lunch, and it did make it possible that we could have a nice lunch, all three of us together, without, you know, me crying or complaining or blaming my husband or being mad at the lady in the apartment next door, or, you know, it was so freeing to let go of it, not to ignore it. Although I did change the place where I sit at the table, so I didn't have to look out the window at the missing trees. I made that little concession too. On the pretext of social distancing. So that there was more space around the table, because my son is coming from the outside, right? So.
You can warm your home with pieces of wood.
No, but the guys who cut the trees were going to take it for that. We said it was fine because we couldn't use it.
What trees were they? Like, was the fir trees? No.
They're a kind of fir. Actually, it's the same kind of tree that Joa's transmission tree. It's that same type. It's a kind of fir tree, yeah. That my husband didn't realize would grow so big when he planted them. He planted them 20 years ago. Also, we found out just recently, and the guys who took the trees, they said, you know, it's too bad, because if you had trimmed them regularly, they're the kind of tree that if you trim them, they won't grow so high. But we didn't know that.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. It's this.
Yeah.
I have several. What do you call cupressus? Cypress,
yeah.
And here in the center of Portugal, because of the fires, we are not supposed to plant trees at least 50 meters from home, at least. And I have many around this little house, many, many, many. Some, there has been a very big wind, one at fall, but not for the house, for the other side. But there are still so many there, cupressus. Really, I don't know, 4 meters from the house. I won't cut them, but every day there is big wind, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's part of the reality of living in nature, you know. I mean, part of our reality is that, yes, you know, my husband explains to me, you know, when you have a garden, you have to take these things into consideration, and then you have a house in the city, and you have to, so I understand all of this, but it's still heartbreaking sometimes, you know, and we know that to live, we have to die, we have to kill, and that in order to, you know, as you know, when you're on your land, Marlene, sometimes you do have to take things out, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, 1 year ago I did.
Yeah.
And it was for me to be comfortable because they are always leaving the leaves and the pets are always with so many leaves and it's the fall. And I didn't know, I have to cut some of them. Because if not, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, how you find the right balance?
What? It's how we find the right balance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Always the middle way. Yeah. And then atoning, acknowledging the life we're taking, and saying we will try to limit it. We won't try to limit the suffering. We'll try to not make mistakes, but of course we will. Because welcome, O life. It's part of life. And we're out of time. So we welcome that too. And we chant the vows. Thank you. We do have the study group on Saturday. You will be receiving the text tonight or tomorrow, for those of you who are on the list.